it's such a big myth that it's like, oh, I have to train 4 or 5 times a week to get results. That's not true at all. If you have a well-written program and you know what you're doing, you know how to progress the weights when appropriate, it really, honestly, 2 to 3 times a week, you can get really good results. Something's better than nothing. I will always say that. That's one. Two, back to like the mistakes that I see a lot of just people that come in. One is they don't get ever get a baseline. But yeah, I think when it comes to in-season training, you got to do something. Have someone build you a program that's really simple and easy, and that will go a long ways for helping you maintain your gains from the offseason.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
We've been talking about it for a while, and now you're finally here.
Finally made it to the cave.
Yeah. Well, we did the Empower episode at your guys' place. Was that like early in the golf season, or like spring, or was it before the golf season started?
I don't remember, because when did we first meet then?
Well, we first met before that.
Well, yeah, but when I...
Well, we first met in college.
Yeah.
back in Winona.
Yeah, back in the day.
But yeah, it was probably, I want to say it was like really early in the year. And then Andy and I came in there and we did the, cause yeah, it was before Andy had his baby.
Correct.
So yeah, it must have been early in the season.
Okay.
Early in the season, we did a episode of Empower kind of talking all things, you know, golf, fitness, performance, why it's important. But today we specifically want to talk about we could talk a little bit about my workouts and strength training, but I think people want to know maybe the stuff they can do on their own in the gym, why it's important. So before we get into it, why don't you introduce yourself, Winona State's finest, up here in the cities with me. Introduce yourself and then we'll get into it.
Yeah, so my name is Jeff Douglas. I'm a doctor of physical therapy and certified athletic trainer. My background started at Winona State.
Go Warriors.
Go Warriors. I knew since ninth grade that I want to be a physical therapist. And so I thought the best route to get there was going through an athletic training program so I could start working with athletes earlier, get hands-on while I was going through school before I went to physical therapy school. Then I went to University of South Florida in Tampa and got my doctorate in physical therapy. Graduated in 17. I moved back to Minnesota, did more just general orthopedics. With that, and I just started realizing that, one, I got the golf bug once I quit high school. I was baseball, basketball, football player in high school, and then the first job I took during my summer off was at a restaurant at Dahlgreen.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
I learned to golf at Dahlgreen for about 5 years, and then once I was just kind of working for a few years, and I miss sports, and I love golf, and so I combined the two, and I fortunately found Jeremiah, who already had a business built. I mean, I wanted to start my own golf, fitness, and rehab, and he already had one built here in the Twin Cities, so I just joined him.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and on top of that, I've noticed in a lot of interviews I've done over the past year, it's really interesting how a lot of people, you know, they, like, got into a, you know, specific industry like you did, or like when I was talking to the hypnotherapist last week, like they got into their field and then like they found golf as a niche. And mm-hmm. It's been interesting how ever since, you know, kind of COVID or that time frame of like, call it 2019, over the last 3, 4, 5 years, a lot of people have like transformed what they do, and whether it's a personal love for the game or just like how many more people have come into the sport have like really kind of honed in on like this for golf or this for golf.
Yeah. I mean, I think in Minnesota, we have the most golfers per capita, I think is a fun fact.
Have seen that. Yeah.
And so we'd love it here. I mean, we got 6 months-ish to just get all we can in. And
yeah.
So it works nice, honestly, on our end too. It's for my business, it's like, I got the winter. Like, we actually have an off season where some places they don't have that. And so from the fitness standpoint, rehab, it gives us a window to actually work on improving our bodies a little bit more than I think other people may do in other parts of the country when they can golf year round.
Yeah, all the time.
With that. Yeah.
Well, so on that point, I'm curious to understand your thought on that, which is, so, you know, I follow a lot of people on Instagram. I'm always trying to learn, like, you know this about me. I'm always asking questions. I'm always trying to, like, find an edge or get better a little bit. And one of the things I've noticed when it comes to, you know, fitness and performance and talking with, you know, aspiring pros, whatever, like, what is your take on the, call it golf fitness and performance compared to just fitness and performance, right? Like, you're an athletic trainer. And I think the term golf fitness gets thrown around a lot when in reality, like, we're doing certain things for our body to get faster, better, stronger. And yeah, of course, there are going to be movements that specifically pertain to golf. Like when you and I talk, you know, or go through a workout, like 80 to 90% of it is still about, like, the body, right? Like getting the body moving and strong, and you're still doing these big compound movements. And then like 10 to 15% of it are specific things that, like, will help your golf game, but are still good for you, right? So, like, the question is, it, like, is golf fitness this just, like, term that people use, you know, to, like, get golfers kind of in, or is it actually a thing, or a combination of both, like most things in life?
I would say it's a combination of both things. I think when it comes to golf fitness, so many people just want to, like, add a, you know, make a golf-specific exercise, and they just add a rotational component to some exercise. When in reality, we need to strengthen all the planes of motion, which we talk about planes of motion. It's forward and backwards, which we call sagittal. There's side to side, which is frontal, and then we have our transverse, which is rotational. And there are some key specific things that you have to know about the golf swing to improve the golf swing. You know, and any, no matter what sport it is, we call it like a key analysis. Like, you need to understand the demands of a sport. And then once you know the demands of a sport, then we have to know how to train what the person needs to do to accomplish the goal. And I think back to, like, doing the evaluation is so important, no matter what sport it is or what client it is, because you have to determine where they're at. And from there, we can determine and develop a program that's specific to that individual. And that's how you get way better results. It's like, you don't go, if someone has a broken car, you just don't diagnose it or just start doing stuff. You have to go in and do a diagnosis and actually figure out, okay, this person needs more mobility, or this person really has poor lower body strength, or this person has decent strength, but they can't create power fast. And if you really want to move the needle quicker, it's, you got to have a proper diagnosis, a good evaluation with that. And you know, and yeah, I'd say golf fitness is a thing. You know, it's more personalized to golfing. And I, you know, is it a sexy term? Maybe. But there is going to someone who's just general versus someone who has specialized, I think you're going to get way more bang for your buck, because there are little things you need to focus on that the general population or general trainer who doesn't work with someone consistently is going to have an advantage and know more.
Yeah. So I'll tell a story quick, and then it'll lead into my question. But, you know, so last year when I showed up to the golf course kind of after the off season, it was very apparent to, you know, all of my playing partners and people that I regularly golf with that, like, I gained speed and distance. I mean, like, I was hitting the ball off the tee significantly further, and I feel like this off season I've gained even more speed. Like, you know, for the golf nerds out there, my driver ball speed, I'd say 2 years ago, was about 164. Going into last year, it was cruising at like 168. And now when I practice, I'm like cruising at 171, 172. And so I'm getting, you know, not only am I getting stronger, but like it's translating to the golf course, and people notice that, right? Like when you hit a driver and all of a sudden it's 15 yards further than the year before. And so naturally the question is, what did you do, right? Like, how did you gain that speed? And the things that I attribute to it, are, flexibility, like in my kind of upper body, and then also, like, you know, call it power movements, or like what you said, you know, maybe more rotational power. And so my story is, I went over, Dave Carruthers, Mama, a lot of people know him in the Minnesota golf world. He played at the U of M, played in the U.S. Senior Am, this year down at the Honors Course. He's been on the podcast. And the guy hits it straight as an arrow. I mean, like, you'd go to war with that guy any day of the week. He can chip and putt the lights out. But his one downside that he thinks is that he doesn't hit the ball as far. And specifically off the tee, like, he hits his irons about the same length as me. And, like, you know, you could get into a lot of things about, like, stronger and weaker lofts or longer shafts to do that. But, you know, off the tee is where he's trying to gain. So he called me one day and he's like, hey, I want you to come over and like, be my speed coach. And I'm like, Mama, I'm not a speed coach. Like, I'm not like, this isn't my thing, but what I will do is I'll show you like what I've kind of done and maybe like take a look and see, you know, what I think you could work on. And he lives, out, gosh, I don't even, you know, probably like another 40 minutes away from here. I think Buffalo, Minnesota. So it's not like he's super close to gyms and all this stuff. And he's really trying to work on, you know, like when he goes and swings in his simulator, like, you know, what can I do to try and gain some more speed and distance? So like, we went over there, and of course he's hitting everything straight, changed his alignment a little bit. And what I did, or what I told him, was like, I think if you just got a little bit more like width and length, you'd be able to hit it further, right? And that had to do with flexibility, kind of like in his upper portion of his body. And then I brought over like a 15-pound medicine ball and had him do like what we've done and what Luke Elfner has told me to do, which is like, you bring that kind of backswing and you throw that medicine ball down and kind of get that like transition rotational power. And I'm like, Mama, you're so good at golf. Like, if you just did a couple of, you know, flexibility things and just a little bit of strength things, like, you're going to be able to gain 10 yards super, super quick. And he's also at a point in life where he's a little bit, you know, older, and he's just trying to, you know, get everything that he can out of his already really good swing. And so my question is, for the majority of people who maybe don't want to go through a, you know, 5 days a week program all the time, like bulking in the off season, like Will Zalatoris, who put on 15 to 20 pounds of muscle, right? They're just looking for maybe some of the like more simple things that you can do, or kind of like the lowest hanging fruit. What do you suggest to those people? Like, what are kind of the, you know, you talk about rotational power and you talk about golf specific stuff. Like, if somebody's in the gym and they add that 10 minutes to their workout, well, what's the stuff that they can do to, you know, what actually translate to the golf course?
Yeah, I think one kind of a thing you just mentioned is it's such a big myth that it's like, oh, I have to train 4 or 5 times a week to get results. That's not true at all. If you have a well-written program, and you know what you're doing, you know how to progress the weights when appropriate, it really, honestly, 2 to 3 times a week, you can get really good results with someone. And I'm talking 45 minutes of workout. So I think the myth of you have to be in the gym all the time is it's a little, sometimes gets overstated a little bit with that. So, but if you want, like, again, it is a little dependent on an individual. So you're talking about, you know, an individual like him. As individuals get older, one, they stiffen up. So that's where a big complaint we get with our 55 plus older golfers is they can't rotate as well. All right. And another thing that happens is someone has not been training, you know, after the age of 35, we start losing muscle mass. So there's a strength starts going down. Once we lose muscle, we lose power. So that's, you know, connected too. So you'd have to, one, diagnose, is it mobility, strength kind of thing? Or it could be both. But say it's just someone stiff, you know, the whole concept of, if I can get more turn, if I can get more width with my swing, that's going to allow me to have more time to generate speed. So that's where, yes, sometimes actually adding more range of motion, one, it's going to hopefully take pressure off the body, the joint. You're not forcing it into positions. So that's just the injury side of things coming in there. Not forcing the body into positions it doesn't want to be in. But two, if I can get a longer turn in the T-spine, if I can get more length with my arms, get my arms higher potentially, yeah, I'm going to have more time to generate speed. And when I used to work with some of the guys at Athletic Motion Golf as their, you know, trainer and physical therapist, you know, some of the fastest ball speed guys with the fastest ball speed had the quickest hands from the top. When they go in the gears, you know, they find that from boom, boom, they in general have higher hand speed just from that first initial thing. So, you know, one thing I like to work on people is hand speed, right? And that's just working on going from point A to point B, from the top to the bottom with just your arms. You know, that could be one thing that would help increase speed. So it could be like a med ball throw from here to there. It could be like a band just pulling down quick. We have that little whip thing that I'll ever use that with you yet.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you may have
seen like something we got to do next time.
Okay. Yeah, there's like, it's called a snag something, but it's
I've seen the other guys in there using it where they're here and you can hear the.
Yes. Yeah. So if you get a good, you know, speed and good release there, you'll get a good snap out of it. So that's like hand speed drills you could do. Range of motion. I mean, just any kind of. My favorite one is rear your side doing like thoracic windmills. I just love that exercise. But that's like something you could do to improve your T-spine rotation. If it's strength, you know, I think most people, again, generalization here, I think people struggle with lower body. People avoid the lower body more, or they don't load the lower body enough. And so when I put people through the strength tests, a lot of people are really good with the chest press, or they're good with the row when I'm looking to see if they need more strength there. But they really struggle with the lunge, especially the older.
That was me.
Yeah.
That was me when we came in and did it.
And so it's so common that people walk in and, you know, when we do the test, we want to see people do 50% of their body weight. So if you weigh 200 pounds, I'd want 250 pound dumbbells holding on to, and you should be able to do 8 reps there. And I'm majority of people can't get to that threshold. And again, it's just a combination of, you know, maybe some people have, in my world, some people are in pain, so they avoid it. They don't know how to modify things to start building the strength up and how to work around pain. So they just completely cut it out, which is not what you want to do. That's the beauty of working with like a physical therapist and a sports performance guy all in one, is I know how to progress and regress exercises like crazy. It's all I do is, where are you at? Oh, they're going to make it harder. Okay, this is how we make it harder. Oh, that hurts, or you can't do that. I have to make it easier and figure out where you're at, and then you start building from there, no matter what your situation is, whatever your age is. And that's really big. So I'd say a lot of people, and then once it's not strength and it's just power exercises. So getting people to start working on ballistic motions.
Okay. What is a ballistic motion?
Like a quick stretch and jumps. Like when you jump, you go down, create a quick stretch, and you jump back up.
So a good example would be like when we do so I'd say everybody listening knows what a box jump is.
Yes. Yep.
Right? You're on the floor, got a box in front of you, jump on top of the box, step down. When you and I do it, I jump on top of the box, and then I don't step down from it. I come back and almost rebound off and then jump back on quickly and then step down.
Yep.
So that and there's is an example.
And there's different versions where you can use the ground to create more energy, like where you go boom, boom, back up, or I'm just having you start from a dead stop and going. All right, different ways to train it. I'm a huge kettlebell enthusiast, and we just started incorporating that more into your programming now because when you do a kettlebell swing, when you go down and you're in the hinge position, you are stretching the hamstrings, the glutes out, and you're all of a sudden rapidly firing. And so there's a point of there's a strength component to exercises, and there's also a power component where you need to move fast. You have to take a weight and work on with intent, and that's the med ball throws or the kettlebells, where you have to work on moving fast, but you can't have too much weight where it slows you. There's a threshold where if I use too much weight, I'm going to be moving slow, actually.
Sure.
So you have to go lighter weights and move it quick. And that's another thing I'm really, in the last year, I've really worked on more with people is getting the ballistic stuff going and the quick, more intent, fast, moving things fast.
Yeah, which is an interesting synergy between, like, what I've noticed in club fitting, right? Like, a lot of people when they go to club fitting, just kind of, you know, trust their fitter. But really what the fitter is looking for is, you know, I'm going to have you swing a 105 gram shaft, 115 gram shaft, 125 and 140 gram shaft. And they're trying to figure out like what's the right mix of like speed, but then also like the stiffness and how quickly that, you know, like how fast do you swing or how slow do you swing? And, you know, trying to do all that, which is really just the exact same thing. It's like the more weight that you're lifting or the faster you can do things, you know, the heavier you're going to need in your shafts or the more stiff you're going to need your shafts for however, you know, you swing the club. So it's kind of an interesting synergy between the two.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think, break down the question a little bit more. I think it's just a little bit of everything's going to be good, but I think just most people aren't doing anything when it comes to golf fitness.
Yeah.
And just putting a little something in there, the recommendation, I think, for just general fitness usually is like 2 45-minute workouts a week for strength training, you know, plus some cardio on top of that for overall health benefits. But if you do that, I mean, I have a lot of people that come in once a week and then they train on their own the rest of the time, or I have some people that come in 2 times a week or three, but if you got in twice a week with a good program, you're going to see some good results if you know what you're doing. And that's where I always just tell people, like, invest in the front end, learn what, like, what your coach wants you to do, you know, at the beginning. And then you'll, once you have that confidence, you don't have to come see that person as much. You just need the programming.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I did it, right? Like, I probably come in once every, I don't know, it's 2 weeks, fair to say. So maybe like twice a month or so. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of reviewing, like, hey, what's the progress you made on your own? What do we need to kind of edit to the program? And, you know, I'm somebody that goes to the gym on my own, you know, probably 3 to 5 times a week, maybe 4 to 6 times a week. And so, you know, fortunate if I go to like Lifetime, they've got literally every, you know, piece of equipment under the sun. And so there's nothing that you can write for me that I can't figure out how to do. And so I think that's the, you know, that's the place that I think most people listening are in. Like, hey, I go to the gym 3 times a week, but, you know, if they look themselves in the mirror, they probably go, you know, they get on the treadmill, they walk for a little bit, and they go, you know, grab some dumbbells, do some chest press, maybe a couple like body weight squats, right? Like they're doing something, but it's not necessarily translating to whatever, you know, output that they're trying to get. And so I think most people would benefit from some kind of like baseline of a program, or just trying to figure out like, hey, maybe I need to incorporate more kettlebells here, and here's some kind of like low hanging fruit I can do to improve, whether it's golf or pickleball or like whatever sport that they're playing. I mean, our audience is obviously primarily golf, yeah. But I think just for anybody out there, like write some kind of program and actually have a meaning to everything that you're doing. I found it really cool. Like when I go in now, I'll try and think of like, hey, what is this doing for my golf swing or for myself? And like when we started doing the, you know, I used to just do traditional back squats or like leg presses. And then now when I do a back squat, I've got one of the boxes behind me and I'm like slow counting 3 on the way down, touching my, you know, ass to the box, and then boom, shooting up. And to your point, like that's the quick movement or the power that we're looking for that ends up generating the speed on the golf course.
Yeah. Yep. I think a few things to kind of go off what you just said. One, for the people that are going already, like it's amazing. And I think there's, you know, just,
yeah, it's just, hey, new year, yeah, new me, new everybody, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, just in the world we live in now, it's such a needed thing that people just need to get out and move more. I mean, this is not even golf related. This is just me being a healthcare provider and the power of what exercise can do to people, and how I have people walk into my office who are 50-year-olds that look like, that move like 70-year-olds, and then I have the 7-year-olds who have taken care of themselves their whole life who can move better than 50-year-olds. And so something's better than nothing. I will always say that. And that's one. Two, back to like the mistakes that I see a lot of just people that come in. One is they don't get ever get a baseline. They go in, they go through the motions, they maybe follow a few things they found off from a workout they've gotten from a trainer 10 years ago that they keep doing. They haven't changed anything, or just stuff they find online. But getting a baseline, like, am I actually making progress towards something? So one, setting goals. But some people just plateau. They just, you know, I grabbed 20 pounds for the curls and I stay at 20 pounds. They don't load themselves enough, but there's a safe way to load yourself properly, right? It's the rough estimate is like you don't want to go up more than 5% a week for your upper body and like 10% for your lower body, right? Just kind of a rough thing. But people just stay at the same weight and they don't keep increasing the load. That's one of the biggest mistakes that I see. Someone, they're scared of getting hurt potentially. But that's how you get, I mean, it's called progressive overload. Like, we stimulate the body by giving it more than it's used to, and it breaks it down a little bit and it builds it back stronger. So people, one, not having a good baseline, I think, is, you know, figure out how much you can squat, figure out, and it doesn't have to be a 1 repetition max either. Like when we do it, it's 8 repetition max, much safer, right? Because anytime we work closer to our 1 repetition max, there's a little more risk
involved. I haven't done a 1 rep max in probably 3 years. You don't have to be honest.
You don't have to.
I'm like, I'm too old for that stuff.
No, but it's just figuring out like, what are some standardized tests that you can do? And so like one in the gym, and there's tests for actually, because most importantly, care about, is it going to affect your golf game? So yeah, like I care about, how much can you press, you know, chest and row and lunge, and what's your vertical jump, and how far can you throw the med ball? But ultimately, those are good things for gym testing that you should do. But you also, all right, what do you ultimately want? I want more club head speed. So you got to get that as well. Because then what I'm doing working towards what I want? Because, you know, you could go through, if you're not getting towards your goal, then you have to change something for the most part, right? If you really want to reach your goal. I mean, you just want some general health, great. But if you actually want to improve to get your golf game better, then we need to see, is what I'm doing inching me closer to the goal? So getting a baseline is super important in multiple different things. And then people loading properly or loading enough weight? And so the general rule of thumb that I tell people, so how do I know if I'm loading properly? How do I know this is enough stimulus? And this is for, there's nuances to this, but just general strength part of the workout. This is not speed. This is not power, but this is just like, I'm just trying to get my strength portion of the workout. I usually tell people, say we're doing, you know, box squats and I give you 4 sets of 8. All right. At the end of 8 reps, I always tell people I want them to have about 1 to 2 reps left in the tank.
Yeah.
All right. So if you were to do your 8 squats and you can't get there, you're probably doing a little too much. All right. Say you only got 6 or 7, you fatigued, you burnt out before you got there. I would say you're probably a little too heavy right there. But say you do one and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, you finish your 8 and you're like, oh, I could have done 3, 4, 5, 6 more. Probably underloading yourself. And now you know, okay, I can add, you know, 5-10% of weight to my next set there. And so I think that's a really general, we call it reps in reserve. Leave 1 to 2 reps in reserve. And that usually will get you in a good place to know that I'm at a good amount of intensity for that particular exercise.
Yeah, that's, talk to a trainer at Lifetime because he helps with my like nutrition plan and calories and all that intake. That's what he always says is the two reps in reserve is how he trains people. And Lifetime is pretty cool because they have like a lot of the machines they're starting to bring into the gyms now. You know, they connect to an app and like they'll track like your load and like your output. You know, like if you're sitting on, you're doing the chest press and like it'll, you know, have you do the actual rep and it'll like kind of track. It's like, okay, you're like 85%. Like you're right there. Like, no, you need to add more weight here. And that's to your point. I see a lot of people in the gym, including myself. I was in this kind of realm for a couple of years where I would just go in. You're just used to what you do. Like, and I think a lot of people consider it like maintenance, right? Or like kind of staying where they're at. But in reality, they're slowly giving some of it back, right? Because they're not actually gaining anything. If you're not gaining anything, I don't think you can necessarily stay exactly where you're at, right? Like you're naturally going to kind of fall back a little bit.
Yeah, I would say probably a little bit. I mean, it's just like, if you're already investing the time to be there, why aren't we optimizing our time? And we want to keep progressively overloading our tissues for them to want to stay around and stay strong.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, it's better than nothing, like I said, but it's just like the fact that I have people have been doing lateral raises for 5 pounds for 5 years. It's like, you know,
hey, let's go to 7.5.
Yeah, it's time. It's time to bump it up a little bit if you really want to get the most out of your time.
Well, so the second thing I'm interested in, like, there's obviously the power, the strength. You know, we talk a lot about like, you know, core and back are really big for golf. What about balance? So I've, you know, incorporated a lot of things into my workouts. Like when I do bicep curls, I'll stand on a Bosu ball and do like a single leg. Standing on a Bosu ball, I do my bicep curls, or I notice like sometimes we're doing like lateral movements, like or like just single leg stuff, right? Like, talk to me a little bit about balance, because I know that's a big thing in the golf swing as well, right? Like you see a lot of golfers maybe get too much on their toes or too much on their heels or too much to one side, and they're kind of out of whack. And every time you know, watch the PGA Tour or whatever, and you're seeing really good golf swings, they always say how they look so balanced and it's so easy and effortless for them. And I think a big portion of that is because they do have such great balance. And when something gets off a little bit, like they're able to correct it. And so, I don't know, maybe talk about it a little bit or, you know, what people can do to maybe better their kind of balance and how they can incorporate that into workouts. Mm-hmm.
So I guess this is coming from the owner, Jeremiah of Empower. You know, he's been in the golf fitness for 20 something years now. And he always says his best players, like the actual best scoring players. And there's no research behind this. This is just observational. He says they always crush the balance tests. And you know, when it gets into, you know, I think it was some of the swing catalyst stuff like Tommy Fleetwood. And this is all that ground reaction force stuff that we really got into at our clinic the last, you know, year and a half with the force plates we got. You know, but the swing calf saying is like the amount of pressure when they shift into their trail leg and into their lead leg is like, it's so consistent. Like he puts, and I'm just making up numbers, but every time he goes in his backswing, it's 80% in his back leg. You know, he gets the same amount, like to be a good ball striker, like how keeping the variables the same, having that ability to maintain, you know, have the exact same pressure shift every single time is going to probably make you a way more better, ball strike.
Well, and you're able to use your power too when you're bouncing. Like the second that you get a little more thrown off, you know, I think about like your feet, right? Like if like my old swing, I used to get on my toes a lot because that's how I thought I could generate power. Yep. And you see the good players kind of stay in their feet and use the ground for power, and they're so balanced that they can actually use, you know, their big muscles to generate power instead of getting up on your toes and overextending and all that stuff.
So they can get into, have like if I always make the the comparison of like if I asked you to jump as high as you can off like a really wobbly thing versus on a solid concrete, which one would be able to generate more force?
Yeah, solid concrete.
Solid concrete, right? So how is that any different if for your balance? If I am not stable, if I'm not rooted into the ground well, your body's not going to be able to create as much force through the ground when you try to create a very violent, vicious, quick movement, right? And so when it comes into training balance, I'm not personally, and this is, if you get into the training world, there's two sides of this, but I am not a, I don't have people balance too often on an unsteady surface. Because one, when are we on an unsteady surface? Maybe when you're on in a sand trap, potentially,
right? Yeah.
You know, and this is for all sports. It's like we always are on a hard surface. So I'm going to try to simulate trying to be on the same playing surface as that the athlete's competing on. And you can't create as much force on an unstable surface. And so I just blend a lot of time. This is my bias. I blend a lot of balance training into my workouts by doing single leg work. Bulgarian split squats, lunges, single leg RDLs, doing like the hip airplanes when we ever have the what's that strap on, right? I just blend it through. And I also am a big believer in training in your socks or barefoot.
Interesting. Why is that?
There's multiple reasons. So, and I don't have, you would see right here, it's not good. These are not good shoes I have on, but I'm a big fan of Ultras. Anyone that has a wide toe box. So it's not a wide box shoe, but a wide toe box, because our feet, the design of the shoes these day and age, cram our toes. Our feet are meant to be spread out and have this beautiful splaying effect. And that helps distribute force properly. And it also, when we cram our feet, it shortens some of the muscles in our feet. So we have all these nerves in our feet that don't have to work when we always are in shoes. The softness takes away the proprioception. And the arch support that these shoes provide make our intrinsic muscles not have to work. When we have all these tiny muscles in our feet that are actually there to help absorb force or help build stability. And so that's why so many foot problems are occurring, is because we wear improper shoe wear. And people's feet are getting cramped, and the muscles are getting...
We should start a shoe brand.
There's plenty out there.
are there some good ones? Are there some good golf ones?
The only golf one I know that's proper with a wide toe box, okay?
Box, okay.
Wide toe box, not wide foot, because that wide foot talks about the middle of it, but the wide toe box. And it looks ugly. It's not a good look, like, for aesthetics. But it's a lot more functional. It's the TrueLinx.
TrueLinx wear, okay.
There's a certain, I don't remember exactly which brand it is, but TrueLinx has a wider toe box one. But just for everyday shoes, like you may see me when I'm in the clinic, but I wear Ultras, and I just got the Solstice 3.0s for that. But having, and they're minimalist shoes, which means there's no drop. So from the heel to the toe, it's the same level. There's not.
I think the Painters are like that. Have you heard of Painter Golf? Mm-mm. Painter.
Okay.
I think Bryson wears them.
Okay.
I think they're similar.
There's another problem is we always have shoes where the heel's higher up, and that shortens the Achilles a little bit when we do that. So that can just over chronic time or years and years and years of wearing a shoe like that, it just affects the feet and it throws it off. So I always make people train barefoot if they want, right, in the gym so they can work on it. They're naturally just working on the intrinsic foot muscles without thinking about it, which is going to improve your stability with that. But yeah, once in a while I do a little balance things here and there, but it's usually built into a mobility exercise. It's built into a strength exercise. It's how I get my balance for just increasing for your efficiency and how much time you have with someone. If I only have an hour a week with someone, I don't want to spend 5 minutes balancing with someone.
Work that into their workout.
There's such other low-hanging fruit that I think is going to... And so many people are weak, and that's why their balance is crappy too, and their stability. They don't have glute strength, and they don't have good knee strength or ankle strength. So if I could just work on something that improves all that at once... Perfect.
So then talking about some of the more elite golfers that you guys have in, the University of Minnesota guys, I know you do them. I think Edina boys golf, a lot of high school golfers and college teams. I think EVR, Mr. Van Rooyen's been in with you guys before. What's the difference when you have those guys come in where they're like very specific for stuff compared to, you know, more generalists like myself or even just, you know, normal folks that come in to train with you guys. Like, I'm very interested. You know, one of the things we talk about on the podcast a lot is like, there's levels to this game, right? You know, the way that a 10 handicap might approach, you know, not only their game, but their fitness side is going to be different than a scratch golfer, which is going to be different than a collegiate athlete and a pro. And so when you guys have the U of M come in or you have professional golfers come in, what are some of the things that they're maybe really, really focused on that's different than you see from kind of your everyday folks?
I mean, I would say it's not much different. It's just the level at which you're doing the exercise is different. They all have the same goals. For the most part, they want to hit the ball. Like, the biggest one is they want to hit the ball further. A lot of people, they want to feel like, I'm tired of being stiff. I'm tired of being achy. You know, I'm tired of being sore every time I play. I mean, that's probably the older population. I get more of that. But when it comes down to it, we're working on all the same aspects. I'm trying to improve mobility with all of them. I'm trying to improve strength. I'm trying to improve power. But how we're going to do it is all based on the level that they're at. And then again, it's meeting the person where they're at. And this is back to what I said, like, I can progress and regress an exercise many different ways to meet someone where they're at. Like, I have a 69-year-old right now, and like, I'm doing, like, I do box jumps with him. You know, we didn't start with that. We worked on just landing mechanics on the ground, but he's jumping to, you know, like a 6-inch box. Whereas the you guys, we might have it at a 24-inch and they're doing a single leg, you know, box jump, right? It's not that I train them different. I'm just meeting them at where they're at based on where they're at. And in skill levels, you know, I wouldn't say it's too much of a like, oh, this person's a scratch golfer over here and this person's a 12. I'm going to change how my training is. As a trainer, I don't care so much about that. I just care what can they handle right now so that I don't get them hurt. That's another thing, meeting someone where they're at. Because if you do too much too soon or you do something they can't handle, well, then I'm going to cause an injury. And that's the last thing that I should be doing as a physical therapist or as a strength and conditioning coach with an athlete is making them worse than when they walked in.
Yeah, whenever I would come into the summer, he'd ask me, all right, well, like, what days you playing this week? And I'd be like, oh, I'm not playing till Friday. Like, okay, we can go hard today. Like, it's Tuesday or Wednesday. We're going to like, oh, I'm playing tomorrow. It's like, okay, it's a little lighter. We're not going to be doing as much. Otherwise, you're going to wake up tomorrow and you're going to be sore.
If you want to talk about tough, like what the big difference maybe from a pro or a college is in-season training, I think.
Yeah, and their schedule,
it's
right?
Schedule. It's demanding. So hard.
Yeah.
You know, how do you mix in a workout when, you know, if it's like a tour person, it's like, oh, I finished my tournament Sunday. I have to travel now next tomorrow or the day after to get to the next tournament, get my practice rounds in, and then have compete at a high level again, you know? And so it's that the in season finagling way more in the golf. So you're not overtraining or you're not overdoing it. And it's, yeah, you're asking questions. How are you feeling? When's the last, you know, today might be just really low intensity, low volume, and in season trains be low volume. And that's, you know, and get into the regular golfers, too many of them stop training when the golf season comes.
Yep.
They make all this, you know, progress during the off season. And then, and especially Minnesota, we live to golf for those 6 months and it's time consuming. You're out there 5-6 hours a day. How am I going to mix in a workout now with all this? And that's where it's like your off season training and in season training is different. If you only get 2 30-minute workouts in, perfect. Cause our goal is not to make, most likely is not to make progress during season.
Not lose it, right?
Just not lose it or lose it at a smaller amount. Like how many guys put on 5 miles an hour of club head speed. And then by the time August and October rolls around,
I just had this combo with Siegel. He had called me one random day and I was on my way to the gym. And so we were talking about working out. Cause like when he's here in the season, like we'll go do yoga and some stuff together. And he made a really good point, which is like I'm trying to just be more of an all around athlete all year. I think I'm going to change my training regimen a little bit. And his, you know, what he said was that, you know, like you just said, in the off season, he would work really, really hard to get in really good shape. And like, he'd be awesome for the beginning of the golf season. And then by the end of it, you know, like he had lost muscle. He'd maybe,
such a common,
you know,
story. Get,
yeah, it is. And so how do you manage that? I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but is it, you know, like I don't go to the gym 5 days a week in the summer. I probably go three to four, and it's different because I do always in the back of my mind have, oh, I'm golfing tomorrow or I'm golfing today or whatever it might be, or like I, you know, just got more stuff going on in the summer. So how do you manage it? And how do you? I think the goal is probably to like we talked about earlier, maintaining stuff, but not losing a ton, yep. right? So what do you do?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is understanding that if when you want to move the needle and actually cause change, it's going to take a lot more work. But the beauty of it is when if you just want to maintain, it doesn't actually take a lot of work. Like the frequency and intensity doesn't have to be anywhere near what it was to move the needle.
Got it.
So in understanding that, like understand in season, if I get two lifts in for 30 minutes, I'm going to probably be stimulating my body and my muscles and my tissues enough that it's not going to go away.
You got to eat good. You got to get your protein and all that stuff too,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And nutrition and my, for me, the number one thing I always focus on with people, especially with people in pain is sleep now. It's because when you sleep, you have more energy. You make better choices when it comes to nutrition. Like people who are sleep deprived eat more calories, right? There's stuff to back that up. You don't recover as well if you don't sleep well. So you feel like stiff, sore when you do it. And then you don't have, and maybe you don't have the energy then to go work out. So I always prioritize sleep number one. There's a great book out there called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. It's amazing. And that really changed my practicing in like the last 2 years. If anyone walks through my door, it's one of the first questions I ask is sleep for performance.
How are you sleeping?
And pain is because if you don't sleep well, you're not going to perform well. And there's injuries go up. There's like studies out there in college players who got less than 7 hours of sleep. There's a huge spike in incident of injuries. So there's just so many benefits to it. But yeah, I think when it comes to in-season training, you got to do something. Have someone build you a program that's really simple and easy. And that will go a long ways for helping you maintain your gains from the off season.
Yeah. So to wrap up like the spark notes, right? Like for the low hanging fruit, and correct me on any of this, if and when I'm wrong, cause I probably will be wrong at some point, but for low hanging fruit sounds like, you know, strength and mobility, right? Like that, those are the two things that, you know, if somebody was just like, hey, I got 3 days out of the week that I go to the gym, you know, you should probably do a little bit more strength, and then you need to start working on like your mobility and rotation, right?
So I'm going to say a little thing to this. I am a big believer that if you do proper strength training, you are getting mobility training in, because if you actually go through the full range of motion, you are stretching your joints out with actually external load. You're just holding a stretch. It adds a little load, but I literally have weight that's stretching my tissues out. So yes, I do believe in mobility training in the optimal like workout. If you were going to work out 5-6 days a week, yeah, there'd be times just to work on stretching and mobility. But if you do a good strength training program and you use the full range of motion, you're going to get mobility training just built into it.
So what I hear from that is that if you had to choose one or the other, you would say a good workout, you're naturally going to get more mobility, stretching out your muscles. Because I honestly think, and this is, again, no data to back this up other than I go to the gym a lot during the week, I see older individuals focus on stretching more,
yeah,
instead of the strength. And what I think what you're saying is it can be reversed, which is like if you actually do a good workout, you're naturally going to stretch.
Absolutely. You're, if you do the full range, you're already taking your joints through its full range of motion, and that's going to improve your mobility under load. Like I never could touch the floor with my hamstring, like bending over, and once I started deadlifting, I can easily touch the floor now because over time, I worked on the mobility and building the strength. And a lot of people are, and there could also, some people might be tight or feel tight because they're so weak and their body, the brain protects and doesn't want you to move that much because you're not strong or safe in that range of motion. So sometimes adding strength will actually allow you to move more too.
Interesting. And so then the follow-up is going to be people need to be prioritizing sleep more. Get like a Whoop or something to track your sleep and how many hours.
Or Ring, Whoop, anything.
Yeah, something to track sleep.
It's such a secret weapon that so many people neglect. I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Yeah.
It's silly.
And then the third is like use the off season to, you know, achieve whatever goals you have, and then don't necessarily be scared that it's all going to go away in a few months. It's a lot easier to maintain than it is to put on.
Way less work needed to maintain than it is to cause change.
Yeah, that's awesome. Absolutely. What obviously people now know so you're out at Empower, yep. Eden Prairie. That's where I go. Again, I see you a couple times a month. I see Will out there, you know, maybe once a week, probably a little bit less frequently right now. But where can people like find you guys? Do you guys have a website or just reach out to you? Or what's the easiest way?
Yeah, website. I think it's m-powerpt.com. You go there. We have Instagram as well. We do virtual training, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if, you know, it's like, oh, this guy's in Minnesota, that's fine. As long as we have the equipment, I actually love virtual training because it puts all the power into the person's hands to change themselves. I don't have hands, you know, sure. to help you. It makes me, one, be a better coach, but two, you have to do the work. You know, so I have a guy in Pennsylvania I train right now. I've had two guys down in Georgia. So, you know, I have people around. And
anybody find you guys from the first pod we did?
One. Yeah, the guy I trained in Pennsylvania.
Yep. Oh, no way. Yeah. That's awesome. Yep. I wonder who it is. I didn't even know we had listeners in Pennsylvania.
Yep. So, it's virtual training is great. So don't be scared that, you're in Minnesota, I can't work with them. No, there's many ways to work around it.
That's really cool now with just golf lessons too. I mean, so many, but you can accomplish a lot virtually nowadays, which is just one of the many benefits of technology. I know there are some downsides.
I went from a 14 down to a 7 through the Athletic Motion Golf guys. All virtually. I went down like once.
You talk with Michael Leonard now too. I think you talked with him. You've done a session with him.
I've done 2 sessions with Michael. Yep.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Well, sweet. What do you have anything for me?
I just love the hard work you're putting in. It's been fun watching you grind, swing-wise and in the fitness, and I hope that you feel like you've gotten more working with me.
Oh, yeah, a ton. Well, people see it. I mean, I see it and feel it, too. I see it on the numbers. I'm excited for actually next year, but we still got, another 3 months.
4 months here, yeah.
3-4 months left of it.
We're just getting the heart of off-season training here, so it'll be good.
Yeah, awesome, man. Well, thank you for coming in. I appreciate it. Again, anybody that wants to find you guys, Empower out in Eden Prairie, that's where I go. It's where the U of M goes, where a lot of high school golf teams go. They do really good work out there. Love working with you. Love Jeremiah. He's awesome. Will Leaf, who am I forgetting? Chris. Josh. Yep. Yeah, everybody out there is awesome. People enjoy it. So thanks for coming on the pod, and until next time.
Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, man. Yep.